And you got to keep fighting the feeling, the doom and gloom feeling. The doom and gloom feeling. And you got to keep fighting the feeling. The doom and gloom feeling.
Hello and welcome to episode 89 of It's Never Sunny in Seattle. The Mariners are squaring up against the Marlins as we speak, but I promise you our undivided attention is here with you, good listeners. Mikey Ahedo has just ordered pho, and he's here to deliver the good word of the Seattle Mariners. How's it going, Mikey?
I'm kind of sick. Hopefully someone will be here to deliver the good pho of Moonlight Cafe within the hour.
Within moments. If this pod stops abruptly, it's because Mikey's pho got delivered and we would never stand in between him and his dinner. Also here with us performing a reverse boycott on this podcast, it's Day. Day, how's it going?
Are we supposed to be boycotting something?
Probably.
Let's just say probably.
There's probably a lot of things that deserve to be boycotted.
Like Molly Moons. All right, we don't got to get into it.
Ooh, please. I mean, they were already in the crosshairs of this podcast once, so I think they're confirmed enemy of the pod, Molly Moon.
That's not even her real name. Let's move on. And they got rid of the balsamic strawberry anyway years ago, so what's even left?
Oh, dude, that's evil.
That doesn't even sound good.
Let's move on.
Okay, fair.
I'm upset.
Well, before we get into Mariners chat, I'd just like to remind everyone that you can join our Discord. We'll post a link to the Discord along with the show when it goes out on our socials on the show Twitter page. So please check that out. And also a friendly reminder to join the Patreon. That can be found at patreon.com/neversunnyinseattle. If you contribute to the Patreon, you can guarantee that Mikey can continue to order out for pho for dinner when he's not feeling well, which is very important. I would say that that's a basic human need. So please consider joining the Patreon. All right. One thing I wanted to get into today on our last episode, Clay Wins asked us a question where they said, is it too early to begin discussing the upcoming trade market? Jerry's recent interview piqued my interest, and I couldn't let another moment pass without bringing this question up to you, our resident trade expert. I know you're always cooking up great trades in your head. I see you propose them on the Discord, so I was wondering if you have any pet favorites right now, anything you think might be likely.
Listen, every fan base loves their homegrown, maybe not homegrown, but yeah, homegrown minor league prospects. But I realize, I'll just speak for the Mariners fan base. Do you remember when I suggested we trade Jared Kelnick for Shohei Ohtani and I got reamed? I got annihilated.
I do remember that.
It's just like, obviously you trade your pieces when they're hot, but I can't even begin to have those conversations. It's like, we're only willing to let go players when they're doing their shittiest. I'm saying, what's the point? This is not an anti-Jared Kelnick take. I hope he stays. I love him as a player. He's not doing as well as he was doing in the beginning of the season, but that's fine. The point is, these conversations are really hard because, I mean, the question comes down to, are we sellers or buyers? And it's unfortunate that we're even having this debate because I think the expectations are pretty high entering the season, considering how well and almost even better the end of last season went. Very heartbreaking. Jordan, we remember. But I don't know. There's players I think that could immediately improve the team. And we have probably the best rotation / bullpen / developing arm still in the minor league system in the league. I don't think there's anybody that at least the fan base is willing to give up. Do you disagree?
No, I think the buying or selling conversation might end up being kind of complicated once the deadline comes around. I don't think it really should be complicated based on the kind of like the longer arc of the franchise. But, you know, with how the team is performing when that time comes, if we're still sitting around 500, you're kind of in like a no man's land, like a weird dead zone. So yeah, I guess that the team's record is going to play a lot into what we end up doing at the deadline day. I am going to start a campaign to get you appointed as the new GM just to see the absolute mess that you would create trading away.
I'm not the contract stuff. I'm not smart enough for that.
Yeah. I would never want to be GM of a baseball team. Whenever I play like a baseball video game, I turn off all that shit.
No, I got to turn it all on. And by year three, I'm so fucked. I just have to start a new franchise.
Exactly. I just burn that shit to the ground. I'm like, we're in win now mode. And then we lose like 200 games. And I'm like, all right.
Just ripping off every player during arb hearings.
Right.
Okay, I have an important question, though. I don't know if you discussed this last week, but are we ready to admit the Rangers are legit? It just cringes. It makes me cringe saying that for many reasons. And Ranger fans are probably rolling their eyes, like, really? Like, you guys are only having that convo now? But are we there?
Jay exposing himself as not listening to the pod when he's not on it. I'm just kidding. No, we didn't.
So you guys admitted last week that they are legit.
No, we didn't really talk about it, and I think now is a good time to cover it, since this has kind of been like hanging over our heads for so long, and I do think it's now creeped up to the point where
I knew you guys didn't talk about it. I did listen last week when I wasn't here, and no. I was like, there's no way I just zoned out the part.
No, we didn't talk about it. Yeah.
The question is Mikey ready to admit the Rangers are for real?
I will walk backwards into hell before I admit. I think we did we not? I maintain that I think that their offense is hitting, you know, better than their skill. Only slightly, I would say. And I just don't believe in their pitching, but it doesn't really matter, because once they build up a good enough lead and they are a good team, like, it's a playoff team for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. Definitely not. The Rangers' true talent is not reflective of their current record, but going forward, it's not going to matter if they build up enough of a cushion in the division, right? So, yeah, unfortunately, I think their lead might hold, if not until the rest of the year, deep into the summer. So I'm concerned about the Rangers, and I think the Rangers' dominance is reflected in the latest crop of All-Star ballot results that we have gotten. I wanted to check in on everyone's feelings about the All-Star game coming up and the Mariners standing within that. It seemed like this was set up to be a storybook situation, right? The Mariners make the playoffs for the first time in 20 years in 2022. We have a young team. We're so exciting. We have Julio. We have a ton of homegrown prospects. And the All-Star game is going to be held in Seattle, with the caveat of all the problems that come along with that. But if we're just focusing on baseball, we should all be so excited. And yet, based on some of the results I'm seeing so far, it's not looking incredibly hot for the Mariners. I would just like to point out that number 9 in designated hitter voting is AJ Pollock. And that's the thing I'm most excited about on this list.
The reserves and the pitchers, as I found out before the show, they get picked by a special committee led by the commissioner's office. I don't think Julio's going to get in through fan voting unless we have a McLemore-esque turnout. I just cursed Julio. but I do think he sneaks in through the committee. It's in Seattle. He had such a huge coming out party in the Home Run Derby last year. I don't know. Maybe they just, worst case scenario, it's a consolation prize and they just ask him to do the derby again. He doesn't make the team. I don't know. It's not looking good. Obviously, we'll have our fair share of arms in the game, I think. Kirby probably makes it. Castillo probably makes it. Probably two. I mean, Seawald makes it, right? I think there's no question about that.
That is just the perfect time to, well, you guys already know. Paul Sewald ranks first of all pitchers in xERA and xWOBA. So he has been the very best reliever in terms of strikeouts and walks and batted ball outcomes, at least as it pertains to their expected WOBA formula and, you know, walks and strikeouts. He has been insanely good this year, kind of quietly, I would say.
Paul Sewald has been sick by those measures, but as Day noted, pitchers and reserves are picked by the commissioner and a special committee. And my question to you is, Rob Manfred out here on FanGraphs sorting by ex-WOBA for relievers, and is he going to recognize the brilliance of Paul Sewald so far, or are those kind of stats something that go a little bit underappreciated in all-star voting? I guess he's been a closer too, right? And so he's...
Mm-hmm. I mean, he knows he has to reward our bullpen, right? In some sure. way. And I just don't see anyone else really getting that. I mean, Munoz has been out for a while. I mean, unless he has like a insane lights out next month before the game, I think it's Sewald. Now, the more I think about it, I think that's our one reliever and probably two starters. And then a pity Julio submission. I think that's where we end up.
Okay, great. I love to make predictions on this show. So if I can force everybody right now, how many All-Stars will the Mariners have on the team? Mikey, you can go first.
I'm going to go with like two, like Julio and a reliever or starter.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, okay.
That's my guess.
I'll go with three. Sorry if I'm stealing your choice there, Day. Wow. Well, this is unfortunate, but I've just received news that Day's internet has cut out just as he was about to give us his prediction. How convenient, Mikey. I don't know. That sounds a little bit suspicious to me. Do you think Day was taking the easy way out and not having to go on record for his predictions about the All-Star game?
I think it's hard to make any other assumption of what, you know, has transpired.
Look, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying suspicious timing. But we've asked Day for his prediction. We'll see if he texts it to us. And if not, then we'll just set his prediction at 15 and we'll see who gets closest. Does that sound good?
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Well, speaking about the All-Star game a little bit more broadly and the implications for the Mariners, Mikey, are there any takeaways that you can pull out of these All-Star game results when it comes to the team? Other than, I guess, our performance has generally been disappointing, but I feel like two teams with the exact same record could have drastically different All-Star voting results. So how do these results make you feel about the team? And do you feel any differently than you did before you saw the results?
I mean, luckily, I'm not someone who puts too much into All-Star voting because of the nature of who is voting.
Normies, you would say, maybe.
Yeah, I think it does speak to, you know, just where the roster's at right now and what they've done this year. Not a ton of, you know, big names like name value. And that's part of the reason. But part of the reason that there's not a ton of name value is because they haven't been particularly good. Generally speaking, you know, it is something of a popularity concert, or not concert. what's the word? Popularity contest.
Contest. Although a popularity concert would be dope.
Wow. Who do you think would sing?
Okay, check this out. I think a new thing they need to add, maybe cut out the celebrity All-Star game from the All-Star weekend, because that's kind of like weird. I don't know why people are like, yeah, I want to see like Bad Bunny and JoJo Siwa play baseball. Like, I don't really care. But they should field a concert made up of all players that are on the All-Star team. And I think that would be really bad and really great to watch.
Unwatchable, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea who can even play instruments. So, yeah, it would be bad. Okay, wait. Who is it? Somebody, there's a player that sang the national anthem or has sung the national anthem. Was it Madison Bumgarner? It was a pitcher. It was some like hard-o pitcher. It was either like Madison Bumgarner or like Max Scherzer, somebody who's just like, you know, one of those hard-ass pitchers. And they're like, I'm going to get out there and sing the national anthem. I swear, maybe I'm not making this up. I don't know who it is.
We could get Colton Wong to do the ukulele and sing the Moneyball song that the daughter sings.
Okay, one second. Oh, it was Adam Wainwright. Okay, so I wasn't wrong when I said it was somebody like Madison Bumgarner or Max Scherzer. Adam Wainwright is the perfect person to complete that trio. Adam Wainwright will be the lead singer of our popularity concert. But anyway.
The crux of what I'm saying is, you know, regardless of name, generally when you have been good and are exciting, you get voted for, and the Mariners haven't been particularly so. I think speaks to, you know, there's kind of two routes to creating a championship roster, and one is kind of stars and scrubs, which is kind of the Angels approach. You know, you have Trout, you have Otani, you have a bunch of scrubs. Then there's, you know, just kind of having a roster full of good to great guys, but no superstars. The Mariners haven't really done either of those things. So I think really speaks to the, and this might be super fucking obvious, but just the lack of upper, you know, echelon talent on the roster, which is like, duh, but also is why, you know, they've struggled.
For sure. No, I think that is a little bit of an obvious point, but it's also good to point out because it's a reminder and maybe something that we lose sight of a little bit watching the team every day. Sometimes we get ourselves hyped up like, oh, Jose Caballero is a star. At least that's what I tell myself. But then, you know, this is a little bit of a reality check to be like, maybe not so. And also supporting your point of the voting results not being a very good corollary to what makes up a good team. The Rays are probably one of the two best teams in the American League, and I'm not seeing many names up here. Wander Franco is, you know, third in voting and shortstops. You know, Isak Paredes is not very high. You know, names like that. They're also somewhat an anonymous team, but, you know, obviously still incredible. So,
yeah, I think them and the A's, I think, have historically been kind of the, you know,
most anonymous teams.
Yeah. Just, I mean, they operate like small,
very small true
market, you know, kind of teams, but a good point.
One other All-Star thing I wanted to bring up. Did you catch the link up between the Mariners and the Padres? We're supposed to be forming a All-Star voting cohort, kind of like a voting coalition, a block. Maybe this is like a super PAC. How do you feel about that? I thought the Padres were technically supposed to be our hated rivals, which, you know, is hilarious, but it was like this weird manufactured feud by the league where they were like, oh, everybody needs to have a interleague rival. Who are the two most like historically mid teams? The Mariners and the Padres.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's also kind of funny just watching, you know, it's like a group of some of the most, you know, just kind of bubbly, personable guys like Julio and Juan Soto and Tatis. And then it's like Jared Kelnick.
Crazy. Hey, guys, I'm here too.
It's, yeah.
Jared Kelnick showing up for this is like me showing up to a party that's like already been cooking for like 2 hours. And then I show up and it's like, yeah, me too, guys. Am I right? They're like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it's odd. I don't really get it. Maybe it makes sense strategically. There's got to be some marketing kind of stuff, you know, going on there. But I find it quite odd. So, speaking of the All-Star game, as the city that's going to host it, Clay Wins asked about, I think Clay's coming in September, maybe? Asked about, game day recommendations, both before and during the ball game. You got any?
Yes, I love this question. I have definitely become a creature of habit when it comes to my ballpark experience. And unfortunately, I'm going to be kind of a bad person to ask about this because I am super basic when it comes to what I do at the ballpark. I don't really have any hot tips except for vegetarian options because, you know, I don't eat meat, so I have to scour the park high and low to find my best options. I'm not sure who is going to appreciate this advice, but I have found that Little Woody's has the best vegetarian burger you get that's down in the pen. They have pretty good fries and stuff too. Don't get the Impossible Burger that is at the stand that's kind of like behind home plate. Dude, when I tell you, that burger sucks. And I tried it so many times because for the longest time, that was like the only meat alternative burger they had at the park. It sucks every time. I was just so let down every time. It's dry as shit and somehow cold at the same time. I'm like, didn't this have to get hot to get dry? And now it's cold. But anyway, that's the first tip that comes to my head. What do you think, Mike?
You're literally Tobias from Arrested Development saying like, no, it never works. I mean, these people somehow delude themselves into thinking it might, but it might work for us.
I did it every time too. And well, never mind. I'm not going to tell that story, but yeah. Do you have any advice, Mikey?
I love, I feel like some people have referred to me as like a foodie, which I just,
ooh,
I can't.
That's tough. That's tough, it's, dude.
Yeah. But yeah.
Your cool card just, please, it's been revoked.
Yeah.
As long as you don't self-identify as a foodie, like I feel like it's chill if someone else calls you that. But if you call yourself that, anyway.
I do love food. And we'll say, I just think it's such an obvious move pre and post game to go to the CID, the Chinatown International District. I will usually stop by Fien. It's a Vietnamese coffee place. They have like really good like pandan waffles and really good coffee, or Hood Famous, which like pretty cool Filipino cafe, but just like, I don't know, man, that shit is so, I don't know what the words are, like chic and just expensive. Like, you know, you get ube cookies, like a pack for like six for $16. And it's like, what the fuck are we doing here? 75% of people in the Philippines are poor. Anyways, eat literally anywhere in the CID. I don't know a bad place. Walk down, you know, and like park there. I often will park there and walk down to the game. And then you only have to pay for like an hour or two of parking. Yeah, that's kind of the pre and post game for me always, especially if it's a late game and you get out at 10, 11, whatever, you know, you go get dim sum. It's a nice little post game thing that I like to do. I tried Chick Chick Boom in the stadium. Very mid. I got like a chicken, like fried chicken sandwich or a burger. Not good. Fries were like super fine. I thought, I don't know. They need like a Korean fried chicken place in that stadium.
Oh, yeah. That's a great call. Oh, man.
Yeah, dude.
Hang on. Let me look it up real fast.
Are you thinking of the new place on Rainier?
What's it called?
Like Kokyo or something like that?
Yeah, that's it. Have you tried that?
I haven't. I've heard good things, but I haven't made it out. There's a lot of Well, I don't know if there's a lot of, but there's a handful of good Korean fried chicken place. I like Seoul Bowl. I love getting their sandwiches and their bulgogi fries. Yeah. But there is a new place that I've not gotten to go to yet, but it's called Moto Pizza, and it's a West Seattle chain. They just opened up, I think it's a section 109, but I think it was on the 300 level. I got there in the fourth or fifth inning and they were sold out. So something that you want to do probably right away, but they have pretty crazy sounding pizzas. And I think the one for me personally is Mr. Pig, which is pork belly, spicy sausage, mango, cilantro, chimichurri, and garlic banana ketchup, which sounds pretty Filipino because banana ketchup is a Filipino invention. So that sounds pretty good. We've talked a little bit on the pod before about like different places, and I think like marination is a lot better outside of the stadium than it is in. And then there's the good seafood place in like center field, like left center field, and Holy Smoke Barbecue is I've heard good things about. So I generally try and eat before I go because it's just so expensive. And honestly, I think like the food, like it's kind of mid now that I've been to other ballparks.
Yeah, we could probably go on about this for, 2 hours. So we're going to have to cut it off at some point. But, Clay Wins, if you want us to go into even more of a deep dive, we can talk about this on the Discord. I just wanted to shout out a couple of game day things that aren't necessarily like food or drink. I do think it's worth walking through the Mariners Hall of Fame. They have a little bit of memorabilia in there. It's not a long section to walk through, and I don't know, it's just fun to see. They have little displays and some game used jerseys, some videos playing highlights, stuff like that. I think that's always fun to go through and see. The team store in general, I would say you could avoid it, but I also think it's cool to look through the memorabilia in the team store because they have a lot of items that aren't Mariner specific, and it's just kind of, some signed memorabilia from MLB legends, which I always think is fun to look through, even though I'm not gonna buy a baseball for $500, but it's cool to go through and be like, oh my God, look at this like Ricky Henderson signed ball, or like this Joey Votto like signed headshot or whatever. So it's just kind of like, it's just kind of fun to see as like a little museum. So yeah, I might check that out too. Okay. You know who may soon be in the Mariners Hall of Fame wing that you can go visit is Ty Adcock. Am I right, Mikey? Yo, I haven't a blues fucking clue who this guy is. I'm going to be honest with you. Maybe I'm exposing myself as a fake fan. But when I saw that Ty Adcock got into his first game, I was like, who the fuck? So please educate me just a little bit on Ty Adcock. Do you know anything about him? What's he throwing? What do his prospects look like? How old is he? Honestly, I'm going to look that up right now if you don't know. I don't even know that.
I know he's eighth round pick, it looks like. So I guess I didn't know. From 2019, he's like 26, so he's not super young, but I don't know. Pretty interesting guy. He throws out of a higher arm slot and like relatively low release. So he gets down the mound all right. But it's just interesting looking at his scouting grades because he has like a 65 grade fastball, and I look at his fastball shape and I'm like, this is pretty mid. I think the pitch that is interesting is the one that he's thrown more than his fastball. It's this slider. Has gotten pretty average grades, but gets a ton of depth at 86 miles per hour. So I think probably helps his fastball play up. And he throws 97. Has pitched two innings and hasn't walked or struck anyone out. Take that for what you will. But, it's pretty cool to see the Mariners just call up these guys and who we literally, I've heard of him, but don't know like hadn't known much about him and had them come up and, you know, he's been pretty good so far, but historically it's just been viewed as like a power relief kind of guy. So yeah, fastball slider guy, fastball shape is kind of mid, but the slider looks real good.
Do you think there is any chance he sticks in the bullpen for the rest of the year, or is this a call up when somebody's hurt kind of guy, call up when the bullpen is kind of depleted kind of guy who's going to make some trips up and down throughout the year?
I'm sure he'll be up and down, you know, because I don't know what's going on with Penn Murphy. Obviously, he just went back to the injured list, but Trevor Gott will be back. You know, does like he probably is the first guy to go. Like Chris Flexen has not been good. But they're going to send down the guy with options. It still makes me sad that Chris Flexen has been so mid, because I really think he can be like even a good starter. But alas, yeah, I think I'm trying to think of kind of a comp in terms of trajectory, because I do think he's going to kind of bounce up and down. I think the bullpen's, you know, as full as it's ever been since DePoto, you know, really has taken over. So kind of tough for him, but yeah, he seems pretty compelling to me.
Yeah. Do you have a comp for me? Because one thing I love is when there's a player I've never heard of and you pull out a comp to a player I've even more never heard of. You know, I'm not even being sarcastic. I love when that happens. I'm like, God, there's so much I don't know. There's so much in this world to discover. Like, it's kind of beautiful, you know? I'm like, wow, what a big world. There's just a shit ton of guys I don't know.
That's a good question. I mean, who would that be? It's a higher, like I said, a higher slot guy, you know, throws from, if you're looking at a clock, like a 1 o'clock release, like a heavy but like firm slider and kind of mid fastball shape. I can't think of anyone off top. He's really, like, I would say he's pretty unlike any guy in the Mariners bullpen, because for the most part, guys either, you know, have a flat fastball, like Paul Sewald or you know, Brash Munoz, or they have really heavy sinkers like Justin Topa, or running sinkers and kind of riding like Gabe Spire. So he's the only guy that's like, you kind of look at him and you're like, yeah, your fastball's kind of stock, you know, mid maybe isn't the nicest or best word, but just like it's pretty generic. Like a kind of rule of thumb for vertical approach angle is they say, like, you know, once your fastball gets to like -5 degrees, like that's kind of when you either want to just throw a sinker instead or reshape it somehow. He's at like negative, I mean, small sample size, but he's right there. So he could probably throw a pretty good sinker, I think, or like a one seam fastball. But I guess I don't have a great comp. His slider is also weird, just in the way that it I don't know, some of its spin properties. It's really like gets a lot of depth for a pitch as firm as it is. So it's pretty nasty.
Yeah, I kind of put you on the spot asking you for a comp. Those are hard to come up with off the dome, so don't worry about it. Is this the only podcast on planet Earth that will talk about Ty Adcock? I almost called him Ad Tycock.
I think yes. We're the only one. Yeah.
I agree. And that's why you people are here. This is what you come here for. Well, let's keep talking about pitching. And maybe we can speak on Logan Gilbert a little bit. Feels a little nasty to dredge up these memories, but Logan Gilbert had a bit of a stinky start against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Wait, they dropped the of Anaheim, huh? It's just the Los Angeles Angels now?
Yeah, but we should always call them the Angels of Anaheim.
Fuck them. They're still in Anaheim. Like, the stadium's in Anaheim. They're fucking posers. That's like, you know, when I used to live in Auburn and people would ask where I'm from, I'm like, oh, I'm from Seattle. You're not, though, are you? You're from Auburn.
Yeah, you're not.
Anyway. You're not. Logan Gilbert, bit of a rough outing. Only 3 innings, gave up 6 earned runs off 2 dingers, 8 hits against the Angels. I just wanted to come back and talk about this because I think you can give us some insight into what was happening under the hood with this start, and maybe speak on if this start, in conjunction with some of his previous clunkers, are starting to add up to a trend to you. Maybe you could start by just talking about what you saw in this last start, and if anything sticks out to you as to why he might have been particularly bad that day.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked a lot about early, you know, in the early goings of, or you know, just over the offseason of, like, what does Logan Gilbert look like if he has, you know, this pretty pure gyro or like bullet slider and a splitter. I was hesitant to believe that they would kind of take, just because I think it's better to bet against it. They both have taken. I think on the whole, you know, I've made him, I think, a better pitcher. I mean, you look at his expected ERA, like he's overall pitched, kind of outperformed it. By xERA, this is the best, you know, version of a pitcher he's ever been. And I guess by his outcomes, at least in terms of like xWOBA to WOBA this year, he's continued to do so. But the thing about a lot of this was that I talked about was, like, if you want to protect a fastball, a gyro slider and a splitter are two of the best ways to do that. Like, if you think about Kevin Gausman's vertical approach angle is about, you know, -5 degrees. Like, it's a very, you know, relatively generic fastball. And yet you look at his fastball numbers and he has one of the highest strike percentages in baseball. Like, I bet it's top 10 in terms of overall or just fastballs. And that's because his splitter really protects his fastball. Like, it's pretty difficult to time up a fastball between the two. So he gets a lot of takes in the zone because, you know, hitters don't know if it's the splitter just kind of falling off the table. That's all to say, Logan Gilbert's fastball should be better this year, but it's actually been worse. And, you know, that's two pitches that, you know, the slider in particular is a pretty, like, platoon-proof or platoon-split-proof pitch. And I think a lot of what is going on is related to pitch location. When you look at, like, his pitch plots, his average slider is getting located pretty much down the middle, whereas the split is pretty much getting located the same vertically, but off to his arm side. So, you know, he's not really gotten lit up very much, but I think the best version of Logan Gilbert is someone who is locating his fastball up and arm side often, most often, and throwing a slider, you know, throwing it like below that and getting it maybe to his glove side. At least more so like he did last year and he's done the year before. And so I think at the end of the day, like, what this comes down to is really just not separating his pitches. Like, not, I know that Brent Strom, the pitching coach formerly of the Astros and now the D-backs, talks about it as like creating room. And it's a pretty simple concept. It's just like you want to give different looks. That's why, you know, you change the eye level and then go to a breaking ball or whatever. He's just not separating his pitches enough and also not really pitching to their optimal location. So yeah, like, guys take his slider in the zone a lot, but also, like, is it going to be easier if you have 2/3 of the time Logan Gilbert's throwing a fastball or slider? If you're trying to react to one of the two, is it going to be easier to do so if Gilbert is locating both middle, or is it going to be easier, or is it going to be easier to do so, you know, if the fastball is up in arm side and the slider is down in glove side? I think obviously, you know, if they're closer together. There's also that his velo is down a tick, and I think that plays a role. But I think he's really just, you know, not been locating where his pitches in a vacuum are, you know, are going to perform the best. And also, when you think about, I think pitch tunneling is maybe a little bit overrated of a or over talked about as a concept, but I think he's not tunneling as well. And again, his slider is a really nasty pitch. Like, it's like nearly 89 miles per hour and has a ton of depth, but like, you know, that is like, I always have historically thought it's been funny to hear people talk about a guy who throws like a 90 mile per hour changeup, because it's like, oh, you know, he throws 94, but his changeup's 89 or 90. So like, it looks like the same pitch until the last second. And it's like, well, yeah, but it also
is kind of the same pitch.
Right. And despite getting more depth on his slider, it's actually, by vertical approach angle, it's come into the zone flatter. And that's because of the way that he's locating the slider. It's just higher, so it's going to be flatter. Whereas in a vacuum, if you're looking at like zone neutral vertical approach angle, like it's got to be, you know, steeper. So I'm not too worried about him. I think Logan Gilbert's always going to be a pitcher that kind of, you know, like misses arm side with his splitter and will miss kind of big with his fastball sometimes. But I think he has taken a legitimate step forward and, you know, generally speaking, optimistic about him. It's also worth noting that his, I don't know, we're not making any claims here, but his spin's down, his raw spin is down, and that is tied to velo, but also makes you think with the enforcement. I don't know.
Well, thank you, Mikey. That was very informative. So correct me if I'm wrong, just to make sure I can sum up and also make sure I understand fully. You're saying that Gilbert can be especially prone to getting shelled when he's missing his spots with his slider and his splitter, because those two pitches also help play up his fastball to be better than it might normally be. So if he's missing his spots with, you know, his secondaries, those two pitches especially, then, you know, all of his offerings end up just kind of being this homogenous blob around the middle of the strike zone. And, you know, he might get picked on even worse in those instances than some other pitchers who have a fastball that can kind of just ride on its own.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I think we've historically talked about his fastball very positively, and it is a good pitch. Like, by Stuff Plus, it's probably up there for one of the better fastballs of any starting pitcher. But I also really don't think it's like a freak pitch. You know, by vertical approach angle, by induced vertical break, like it's not otherworldly. So I think just between the velo being down a tick and yeah, just like you said, just kind of having a homogenous blob in terms of locating pitches, he's gotten shelled a couple times, but I'm very encouraged and he's still very good.
Well, Logan Gilbert's next start lines up to be against the White Sox, I think, if I'm reading this correctly, a team that has been disappointing in many ways this year. So hopefully he'll be able to right the ship. Do you want to look forward a little bit to what's coming up for the Mariners in their next few games? We're currently watching the Mariners lose to Miami right now, even though they've already won the series. So, you know, dropping the rubber match isn't as painful as it could be, but also it's just so frustrating that there's like this glass ceiling of 500 that we really haven't been able to break all year. But that aside, wrapping up the series against the Marlins, we're going to take on the White Sox at home, the Yankees at home, and the Orioles at home.
That's going to be a tough stretch.
Yeah. The Orioles especially, man. The Orioles are cooking. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, they're second. I mean, they're above the Yankees and their division.
It really feels like a what could have been looking at them right now compared to the Mariners. It feels like they were kind of in our position last year, being, you know, good and contending with us in the wild card. But the Mariners kind of like little broed them. You know, and we're like, yeah, we're not really sweating it about the Orioles. And now shoes on the other foot, and the Orioles have been good.
The shoe is on the other foot.
Dude, do you like my, I have so many of these just like old white guy idioms in my brain. That's most of what my vocabulary is. And so many times I'll say one of these and my partner will hear them and be like, what the fuck does that mean? Did you make that up? Like, why are you so old?
You should just start making up idioms.
It would go right past her. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. I think it'd be a good bit.
She doesn't care what I'm saying half the time anyway, so it's fine. Anyway, yeah, I'm especially curious to see what will happen in this White Sox series. I feel like that's going to be another test similar to the Marlins. Us facing a competent but not great team. We've lost to a lot of good teams and we've beat up on a lot of bad teams. So now it's time to see what happens in the middle.
Yeah, I think we actually match up pretty well coming up because, you know, the Mariners are a pretty good fastball hitting team. We get Michael Kopech on Friday. Lucas Giolito has not been great. I think he's starting to come around, but you know, has struggled. I could see us having some trouble with him. And then Lance Lynn has been like pretty rough. But in particular, like we have Cole Irvin coming up next Friday, or I guess next Friday, because this Friday is this Friday. I think him, Clark Schmidt, and Domingo Herman are guys that we match up pretty well against. So I think the games that we could struggle with the most, I guess, are Giolito and Garrett Cole, of course. But even then, I think Garrett Cole's kind of scuffled as of late. So I think they're tough matchups, but I think made a little bit easier because of how, you know, they're kind of lining up and just how where guys are at in the season right now. So a good opportunity. I just hopped off a White Sox podcast to win another series and then go into Camden and Yankee Stadium. You know, like I think we match up better there than we do against them at home. So it could be better than we think. It could also be very bad.
Yeah, I'd like to correct myself. Earlier I said that Yankee series was at home. It's not. That's been killing me for the past like 2 minutes. I'm like, oh my god.
LOL. The White Sox is at home.
Correct. White Sox is at home. Okay, it's starting to be a bit of a pod tradition to predict the record of the Mariners for the next two series at the end of the show. So let's do it. I'll go first. Shit. I like how I said I'll go first. I don't have an answer. Okay.
Okay, so 3, 6, 9.
Six games. Yeah, fuck you, dude. On that podcast that I wasn't on, I heard you making fun of my math. I'm like, okay, over the next six games, you were like, oh, here, I'll be Dustin. What's 2 plus 2? And I was like,
I said that?
Something like that, yeah. But it's all right, and it's...
No, I'm pretty sure I was just... I don't think that was what I was saying. I think I was trying to make a joke about you playing the middleman or, you know, whatever.
Oh, okay, sure. A likely story. Anyway, yeah, over the next six games, I say we will go. I'll be optimistic. All right, here we go. 5-1. Boom.
Oh, we're going. Okay, I see. So we're not going over the next 9.
Next six, because we usually record once a week. So that's about, you know, a week's worth of games.
So true and fair, bestie.
Thanks, bestie.
I was also going to go 5.
Oh, my God, bestie. you can pick the same thing as me. I like that.
All right, I like that too. We're gonna go 5-1, and the game that we lose, watch it be to like Lance Lynn and not Garrett Cole.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. It's gonna be something super dumb like that.
Yeah, I feel decent about that, but of course, like I'm sure it's we're gonna win like 2. fuck me.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Day texted me on the side and said that the Mariners are going to go 1-5 over this stretch, so he's not feeling so hot.
I don't think he said that. Also, Looks like Jared Kelnick just hit a fielder's choice.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you all listen to this pod, you will be in the future and you will know what happened, and it'll either be dope or sad. But the Mariners have just super weirdly worked their way to have the bases loaded with one out in the ninth. So you future people will know the outcome. We are watching it happen before our eyes.
Should we just
hang out? Sure. Yeah, we can just sit and we can get our live reaction in case something dope does happen, and then, you know, splice it in.
Or if something doesn't, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take this out if it doesn't. Okay. Runs! In play runs! In play runs! Let's go!
I'm so behind, dude. Are you watching on video?
I'm watching on game day. In play run.
That might be a fucking dinger. Oh shit, he caught it. No, I think it's just one run, dude.
Jesus Christ.
I think that was going to be a home run if he didn't catch that.
He robbed it?
Yeah.
Shit.
Oh my god, Jesus Sanchez. No fucking way. Oh yeah, dude, that was a home run.
You know, sometimes I feel like the game watching experience is even better on game day.
What do you mean?
Sometimes I would rather just watch the game day feed than watch the game. There's something so suspenseful about in-play runs, and you just get to sit here and be like, "Oh my god, oh my god." Like, the suspense is a lot more drawn out, you know, it's fun.
It's also Cal Raleigh as a righty here, so.
Aye.
God, he looks like a fucking...
Oh.
What? Please don't. Oh, did we just lose? I'm seeing a lot of fucks in the game day chat, so. Oh, shit. Okay.
Well, scratch that. The Mariners have lost, and the pod is over. Permanently. Goodbye. Check out the Discord. Check out patreon.com/neversunny in Seattle. We out of here.
Goodbye.